Hi, this is Leo, and this is my KFI podcast. This show originally aired on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles on Sunday, April 16th, 2006. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth for this podcast. This is show 240.
April 16th, 2006.
Bill Handel, tomorrow, 5 to 9.
KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. The show notes are online by going to the KFI website. You can find them very easily. You don't have to remember anything, just KFIAM640.com. And my name, of course, which is Leo Laporte. That's over on the left, KFIAM640.com, Leo Laporte on the left. And that'll take you to Leo.AM, and that's where the show notes are. That's the show note website. And if you click Sunday's show, that'll take you to the current show notes, which are show 240 for Sunday, April 16th, Easter Sunday, 2006. You can make comments at the bottom if you've got a suggestion, you hear something you want to correct, if you want to cast your vote on what you would do with the case of the flushed cell phone. That's all a good place to do that. You also find links there to the chat room, the audio archives, past shows, and a lot more. We're almost caught up now. I've been editing the shows like a crazy little bunny, and I'm almost caught up. I posted the April 2nd show, so I'll get next week's up, or last week's up next week. And by this time next week, I should be all caught up. And then what I'm going to try to do is get the shows out within a day of air from now on, so that you can listen. Now, of course, I'd prefer you listen live, and I know most of you do, and that's more fun. But if you miss a show, you can always listen either on the podcasts on KFIAM640.com or on my page, where you'll find audio archives going back to the very first show I did here. And you can subscribe to my podcast as well, because I have lots of them. I think the last count, there's an iTunes button on the link, and you can click there. I think last count is 9 or 10. I've even lost track. Joe Anaheim, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI. Hello, Joe.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, thanks for calling in.
Hey, I got a question. I built a Linux firewall.
Okay.
And I did a scan on Shields Up.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's showing the media access, the MAC address.
Yeah, that's interesting. Is it showing the MAC address of the Linux box or of your router or
the external NIC?
Yeah, well, it's always going to see that.
Okay, so is there any way that we can...
You want to hide that MAC address?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
How come?
I don't know. I just thought that there would be another security hole with that.
What does Steve... You know, I've never even thought about this. What does Steve say about that? And Shields Up, you know, when you get... Shields Up is a wonderful site, by the way, grc.com.
It's I've been using that for a while.
Yeah, you could test your connection. It's a good idea if you put up a firewall or you build your own and run it just to see what he says. So does he say anything about seeing the MAC address, like whether that's a bad thing or not?
He mentioned, let's see, I have it right here. He does mention that it's the next generation privacy threat.
Yeah.
And that, but the exposed network MAC address problem is much worse since it's already here. It's fully deployed and available for asking for most computers on the internet.
Interesting. Well, what he's saying is, yes, you can, everybody shows it. So I don't see really how you would hide that unless you put it behind another proxy of some kind. But what you're doing in effect, though, and this is what a router does. The router is exposed.
Yeah, I have the WAN IP. I have two NICs, and I'm running NAT.
Yeah, well, that external NIC that is in effect your router's. You know, that's what's exposed. In fact, that whole machine, that Linux machine, is exposed in that sense. And that's something's got to be on the outer boundary. Something's got to be hanging out there. Otherwise, you're just not visible on the net.
No, I don't mind seeing the IP. I was just curious about them.
Yeah, I'll have to ask Steve. In fact, if he's listening, you can call in, Steve. Because I don't think there's anything you can do about it at this point, except you could spoof the ID. But I don't know what I'm not sure if there's an advantage to that. But many devices, certainly all routers, and I would bet your NIC but you'd have to check and see in the software for the NIC, the driver software, allow you to spoof its MAC address. And but I don't know of any attacks at this point that use the MAC address particularly.
Okay.
I might be wrong. That's a very good question, and I will. I promise you that will be something I'll bring up. Do you listen to the Security Now podcast we do?
No, you know, most of the time I'm in my truck listening, so this is the first time I actually had some time at home to call in and ask about this.
We do a podcast, Steve and I, every Thursday. I will certainly ask him on the next Security Now. You might, if you're interested in this kind of stuff, that's what we cover in the podcast. It's available at thisweekintech.com. And it's free. Okay. It's just a free download. It's about half an hour a week.
Okay, great.
Something good to listen to in your truck. I will ask him about these issues. But as far as I know, and maybe somebody correct me if I'm wrong, that everybody can see your MAC address. The question is, what can they do with it? Just like knowing your external IP address. If you're otherwise protected, I think you're okay. The thing to look for is MAC address vulnerabilities in... Now, in your case, you're using Linux, but so you'd look for it in your Linux. If you're using a router, you'd look for it in your router. And I think it would there would have to be a vulnerability. There'd have to be some sort of spoofing attack that would somehow convince, you know, your Linux that you're... The MAC address is a unique, by the way, just for people who want to know. What are you talking about, MAC address? Every network device, your router, your network cards, your USB Wi-Fi adapters, your internal Wi-Fi adapters, they all have a unique long number that's called the MAC or MAC address. And the MAC address identifies them uniquely. So it is a way of, it stands for, what does it stand for? Media Access Control Layer. That's it. MAC, Media Access Control. So it is a physical address as opposed to a virtual address. That's your IP address. It is used for some routing, but I don't think there is a security issue at this point. Let me, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that you're okay. 1129, Leo Laporte on K. You know, I'll tell you what, during the news break here, I'll see if I can get a hold of Steve and find out. The tech guy on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
It's your weekend. We just make it more stimulating.
KFI AM 640.
11:37 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. One of my favorite moments in the movies. Is it Annie Hall? I think it is. Woody Allen standing in line, and there's some Rutgers professor standing behind him in line, pontificating on and on about the theories of Marshall McLuhan. And finally, Woody just gets so angry, says, you know, I happen to have Marshall McLuhan right here. Let's see what he says. And he pulls Marshall McLuhan out from behind his sign. McLuhan says, you know nothing about my theories. You're an idiot. And then he goes back behind the sign. Now, that's what I call clout. And I'm very pleased that there are a couple of people I know that I can call on, even on Easter morning. And one of them is Steve Gibson.
Hey, Leo.
Steve, I really appreciate your being available to us.
Hey, of course. I was just sitting here in front of my computer coding some new stuff. So.
Yeah, he's working on something really cool for the Shields Up site, grc.com. So here's how this came up. In fact, it was just a minute ago, our first caller of the day. Joe is running a Linux firewall. You know, he built it himself. He's got two NICs. He's got an external one, you know, that sees the outside world, and an internal one. And he went to Shields Up just to test it, as anybody would when they're first setting up a firewall. GRC.com. That's Steve's site. And you said, I see your MAC address. Here it is. And he said, uh-oh, should I worry? And I said, I don't know. I don't know of any exploits, but that, you know, I know somebody who would know, the guy who wrote Shields Up. So let's ask him. So... Steve, first of all, how did you know his MAC address?
That's really interesting. I had to have gotten it. Shields Up gets it through Windows file sharing. So he does have something to worry about.
His port 39 or 139 is open.
Right.
So you wouldn't normally be able to see that at all. It isn't routable.
Well, it's not routable. Okay, as we know, MAC addresses are, when they come from the factory, that is from the manufacturers of network interface cards. The MAC address is sort of like the physical Ethernet address for an individual Ethernet adapter.
It's kind of like a social security card. Each adapter has its own one and only unique MAC address.
Exactly, because the way the Ethernet works, MAC addresses have to be unique on an Ethernet. It's like the adapter's serial number for itself. And when you're putting a bunch of adapters onto a network, they have to have different MAC addresses, and there can be no collision.
So it's not used by the internet; it's used by your internal network, your LAN.
Exactly. However, it just like a social security number, it does uniquely identify you, sort of through your network adapter. So for example, if people were in general making their MAC addresses available, it's sort of like a super cookie. It's something that you can't change normally, and everyone could identify you uniquely in the world.
So, okay, and he was visible. He has a larger issue, though, because in a sense, he's putting his network on the LAN, the worldwide LAN, not the internet, but he's making it accessible over to anybody.
Yeah, the really interesting thing is that the way this is apparently leaking from his network is that he does have Windows file sharing exposed. And that's a big no-no.
So that's the first thing he needs to do is turn off. He's probably got Samba running, and he has to turn off Samba or at least block it.
I'll bet that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
And so what Shields Up showed him when he came to GRC.com, it's showing him probably his MAC address of his Linux firewall that he set up.
Yes, that's right.
And so if he's got Samba running, he's got open shares.
Right.
And that exposed externally, which, unless he has some need for that, he definitely wants to shut that down.
It's kind of neat that you test for it, even though you probably wouldn't see it in most cases.
Yeah, well, you know, years ago when I wrote Shields Up, it was present, and I thought, well, I'll just show people, because why not?
So normally, if you don't have other ports open, people won't be able to see your MAC address. If they can, it's not really that there's security issues with them seeing your MAC address. There's a much larger issue. They can see your file shares. And as we know, Windows file sharing is not particularly secure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, good. Shields Up is so great. See, this is the kind of thing Shields Up was written for. GRC.com. While you're there, check out SpinRite, which is Steve's great program for fixing hard drives. You know, we have a listener in the chat room, Alan in Kentucky, who was asking yesterday. He had a bad USB drive. He said, I guess Shields Up won't see it. And I said, no, I don't think it will. And it does.
Yes.
Steve, you're so good. So he said, yeah, it saw it. It fixed it. So
that's so neat.
He loves it. So thank you.
Yeah.
Once again, another happy customer. If you've got problems with your hard drives, maintenance and recovery, Shields Up is the ultimate program at GRC.com.
Well, SpinRite.
I'm sorry, SpinRite. And Shields Up for testing.
We got so much stuff going on.
I get confused. And Shields Up is to test your firewall, of course. And don't forget, as I mentioned, our podcast, Security Now, every Thursday. Steve, I'm going to let you go. It's Easter. You should stop programming, go out and eat a ham or something.
Glad to be here, Leo. Glad to help.
Thank you.
And I'll talk to you soon.
It's great. Yeah, we'll talk again on Thursday for Security Now. Take care, Steve. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Happy Easter. He loves ham sandwiches, so I figure he's probably having a ham sandwich right about now. So there you go. Actually, that's from the horse's mouth. He's my Marshall McLuhan. Jeffrey Lafayette, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hi. I'm doing a podcast called The Techer. And
wait a minute. How old are you?
11.
You're my son's age and you're doing a podcast.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Are you in Lafayette, Louisiana, Lafayette, California? Where are you?
Lafayette, California.
All right. So you're up in Northern California.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you for listening to the show.
I can't really afford bandwidth for a podcast.
No,
right
who
now.
Can, huh?
No, I can't right now.
Right.
So I'm using I have a domain name and I'm just using it. I want to host it on my server, but I want to use the Coral Content Distribution Network.
Yes.
If you really recommend it.
Coral's great, yeah.
But the thing is, it doesn't show up in iTunes when I add it to the RSS feed if there's a port, in this case 8090, in the domain name.
Really? So
yeah.
So iTunes won't see it if it's Coral distributed.
Yeah. So I emailed Yeah.
I'll tell you how you do that.
Okay.
And I'm sure this is what Mr. Friedman over at Coral told you. You have to do, in your RSS feed, just do normal URLs as if you're linking back to that file on your site, right?
Yeah.
And then you have to use mod rewrite on your site.
Okay.
HTTP server do you use? Web server do you use?
Well, right now I'm just hosting it at a different web provider, so I'm not really sure.
They probably use Apache.
Okay.
And if they do, now it's a little tricky. You have to see if they have enabled mod rewrite. If you have, you know, that you have to ask them if they've enabled mod rewrite.
Okay.
It is not a normal part of Apache. It's what they call a module. But it is the single most useful module in your web server is mod rewrite.
Okay.
Once they say, oh yeah, we've got it enabled, then you will write a custom .htaccess file.
Okay.
That will go in your root directory.
Okay.
Actually, the directory where your podcasts are, and it will say, in fact, if you look in the wiki for Coral, I have an article about this, I think, because I think I was the first one to do it. And you will then create this htaccess file that will say, whenever somebody asks for an MP3 file, add the Coral URL to the front of it and then send it out.
Okay.
So what will happen is iTunes won't know you're doing it.
Okay.
iTunes will see the feed. It'll all look normal. Everybody else will see the feed. They'll click on a link. But anytime somebody tries to download an MP3 from you, it will automatically go through Coral instead of from your server, and you'll save all that bandwidth.
Okay. Is it possible for you to put that in the show notes?
It is. I will put it up in there. It's because it's very tricky and complicated. And even the details I put in the show notes will really be more of a roadmap to you, Jeffrey. You have to.
Okay.
You're kind of going to have to figure it out. But it sounds like you're pretty savvy. Another thing to look at, and anybody who wants to do a podcast should probably look at Libsyn, LIBSYN.com.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
They're cheap. The most they cost is $30 a month. And unless you have a very, very large podcast, probably you get away with their I think it's $10 a month service.
Yeah. Now,
I know that's not free, but
it's still a pretty good price.
It's pretty good considering unlimited bandwidth. So even if your podcast gets very, very popular. Coral's great too, though. It's just going to take a little more work. And this is a good thing for you to learn, Jeffrey. Knowing how to use mod rewrite is a very, very good skill.
Okay.
You're 11. Are you in 6th grade?
5th.
5th grade?
Yeah.
What's your podcast about?
It's about tech. I haven't done any more episodes yet because I'm waiting for it to use Coral. But
Jeffrey, are you a genius? Are you like, is your IQ like 100,000?
Yeah, I don't know.
Are there other kids like you in your school and class?
I guess so.
It's just, you know, I'm trying to figure out if it's your unusual and very, very special kid, which obviously you are, but, or maybe this stuff is now just trickling down, and everybody your age kind of knows it.
Yeah.
I just can't believe it. That's wonderful.
Cool.
That's great. Jeffrey, keep up the good work. My email address is leo@leoville.com.
Okay.
So email if you have any other questions, and I can help you. And I know Michael Friedman pretty well over at Coral, so I can help intercede with you, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck, Jeffrey. You give us all hope for the future. And all the grown-ups are going, I have no idea what that kid asked. Or what they were talking about. It's an 11-year-old who is, it's like Einstein. It's like particle physics he's talking about. It's not English, is it? I'll tell you what, let's take a little break and I'll kind of explain for grown-ups what he was talking about in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:48.
He's really easy to get along with once you learn to worship him. Bill Handel, the most listened to morning show in Los Angeles.
KFI, AM 640.
Leo, did you really have to say eat it? I mean, it was in the toilet. Happy Easter, by the way. I don't think I count as being anonymous. I haven't had a cell phone myself, but with a little pocket television set that I bought from Radio Shack for about $200, I ended up taking it back. I'm sorry, but it was too much expense for letting an accident like that take it away from me. They can afford it better than I can.
That's Spock Avriel, and we won't give his real name. But the question of the day is, you know, I accidentally flushed my cell phone down the toilet, recovered it. I was able to get it working, thank goodness, by letting it completely dry out. But the question is, if I hadn't been, if this happened to you, what would you do? A, just, you know, I won't say eat it, just take the expense and buy a new one. Say, you know, I blew it, I broke it. It's under warranty. You know, it's only a month old. Or two, do you bring it back and not tell them what happened? Just say it's not working, get a new one for free. But you kind of have to lie to do that, right? Or three, bring it back and tell them what happened and hope, you know, throw yourself on their mercy. Knowing that chances are pretty good you'll be laughed out of the store. Spock Offreel took the low road and said, I'm not going to tell them. It just broke. I don't know what happened. I don't understand it. So let me explain what Jeffrey, our 11-year-old previous caller, was talking about, because I know it wasn't English. Podcast, according to a survey, is about 25% of you understand what a podcast is. I think this audience, you guys know about this stuff. It's an internet radio show. So the kid, 11 years old, has an internet radio show. You distribute a podcast by creating the show, putting it on a website, and you know, people who go to the website directly and download it. But what makes it a podcast is they can subscribe to it. They can go to iTunes, which is the most common place, but there are lots of other ways to do this. But most commonly, you go to iTunes, you click the podcast button, you see this list of podcasts, and you press the subscribe button. It's free, and you'll get that from now on. It'll download automatically. The problem he had is he can't afford the bandwidth. He's 11. He's a fifth grader. He can't afford the bandwidth. So what he's hoping is to use a content distribution network, or a CDN. There are commercial content distribution networks that, in fact, iTunes uses one called Akamai. AOL uses Akamai. They're very popular, but they're hugely expensive. The way they work is they have many servers all over the world. And when you download something, normally when you download something, let's say you're going to download something from me, you'll go to my server, my particular computer, and you'll get it from me. And, you know, I bear the full bandwidth cost of that. Well, Akamai and other content distribution networks make copies of that file on hundreds of servers distributed all over the world. And when you download it, you're automatically routed to the one nearest you. It means the downloads are faster. They can handle much more traffic. But it is expensive normally. Well, the folks at NYU and Michael Friedman in particular have created a free content distribution network called Coral. And actually, with the support of the U.S. government, the National Science Foundation has funded their research. It's at coralcdn.org. And it's for anybody to use. All you have to do is add a little bit of text to your address. .ny, so you'd say, you know, leoville.com.nyud.net:8080. And then, boom, all of a sudden, when people download, they think they're downloading something from you, they're actually getting a cached copy from one of the 260 servers that Coral runs worldwide, mostly run by universities and so forth. His problem is that it didn't work with iTunes. Now, it should work with iTunes. There may be other issues there. But there are two ways to get this changed URL, this changed link. One is just to write it yourself on your web page. So when people click it, they go automatically. But there's a sneakier way that will fool iTunes and fool everybody else. And that's to have the web server do it on the fly. It notices somebody's getting an MP3 file from the server and says, whoa, hold on, we're not going to serve this. Go get it from them. And you can do that with this very, you know, kind of tricky system called .htaccess and mod rewrite. That's as far as I'm going to go on that. I'll put details and links in the show notes for how to do that. But that's what we were talking about there. I know it's kind of complicated. What blows my mind is that you've got this 11-year-old who is essentially a publisher. And he's faced with the issues that a publisher faces of distribution costing a lot of money. He's found a great solution to do it that's free with help from the National Science Foundation, the NYU, New York University. What a world we live in. I mean, that's just exciting. And you know, I don't know what his podcast sounds like. I'll sure listen to it. But it doesn't matter. There's people all over the world now creating their own content. And I just find that very exciting. When we come back, Mike's going to ask me what my opinion is on the best Apple product of all time. We'll talk about that and a lot more as we continue. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio, 1159. Jessica Rosenthal is in the KFI News Center.
April 16th, 2006.
Tomorrow, partly cloudy, high 60s, low 70s. It's 64 right now in Los Alamitos, 62 in Santa Ana, 59 in Burbank, and 63 in Marina Del Rey. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 12:06, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
Thank you, Jesse. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Let's talk high tech. 1-800-520-1KFI. 1-800-520-1534. A number of people pointed out, I did not know this, but a number of people pointed out that if I had tried to bring my water-damaged cell phone back and say, I don't know what happened, it stopped working, apparently some phones, like the Motorola Razr, have a little tab in the phone that changes color when it gets wet. And they could open the phone and say, well, you may say it stopped working just by itself, but we can tell it's been submerged in water. Well, apparently I'm not the only one who has dropped his cell phone and in a puddle or whatever and tried to bring it back as defective. So there you go. There you go. Now, and then there are also people in the show notes who are saying, but you can't replace that water tab. Oh well. I'm honest. I would have a really hard time claiming that it was damaged, defective when I was the one who screwed it up. It just doesn't seem right to me. What would you do? My cell phone got submerged in water. We won't talk about how, but it did, and it stopped working. Now, of course, as always, I immediately, popped the battery, took it out, let it dry, and it's 2 days, 3 days of drying now. I just this morning put the battery in, and it's working. Hallelujah, because I just got this thing. So my question has been, what would you do if it didn't work? Would you buy a new one? Just say, hey, I blew it. I dropped it. Would you lie and say it's defective? It's only been a month. Give me a new one. That's what some have said. Or would you take it in and tell them what happened and hope that they maybe would be generous? Mark has another solution.
If insurance exists, but...
Well, let me rewind.
I had a similar situation with my digital camera that I just bought, and I dropped it, and the lens got smashed in. I called up American Express on my mom's card. They had me send in the camera, and after 2 weeks, they refunded the entire cost of the camera to my mom's account.
So his point is, if you have a credit card, if you charge it to American Express or other cards that give you this kind of buyer's insurance, no matter what happens. So that would be a good, that's a good solution. I should have checked. Well, I didn't need to because it works. I feel very fortunate. I don't have to suffer the humiliation of telling them how I got it wet. Mike, New Jersey, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Poonface Bachelor.
Now, he's not insulting me, folks.
No.
You want to tell him why you called me Poonface Spatula?
Because it's a nick on a, what is that name? I can't
Second
remember.
Life. Like Second Life. Second Life.
That's it.
That's my name in this kind of 3D world.
Right.
Yeah. You don't have an account there?
No, I don't. I have too many accounts.
So I can't call you some funny name?
No, you can call me anything you want. I don't care.
I'll call him Mike B. from our chat room moderator. Hey, Mike.
Anyway, as you teased before the news break, in your opinion, what do you think is the greatest Apple product of all time and why?
That's a tough one. I mean, in one respect, you'd always say, well, the newest one is the greatest, right? Because they're always better mm-hmm. and faster. And I have to say, and you own a MacBook Pro. I have to
say,
the MacBook Pro, yes, it's the newest and currently the fastest. Well, maybe the quad Macs are faster, but it's close to the fastest Mac out there. That's a pretty good contender. Would you agree? Have you been happy with your MacBook Pro?
I am very happy with it. In fact, I'm moderating the chat on it right now. Meanwhile, my Mini is logging the chat for the show notes later.
Yeah, that's nice. Mike's actually was a Windows guy until he started becoming our chat mods.
Still am, Leo. Still a Windows guy.
Well, for a Windows guy, you seem to be doing a lot with the Mac.
Well, I use them all, and I try to be platform agnostic as I can.
That's my philosophy. Use what works best. Use the right tool for the job.
Absolutely.
I think you can make a very good case, certainly economically, that the iPod has been Apple's best product ever. And it's certainly sold more units-wise. It's done more to revitalize the company. But there have been many landmark products for Apple. The first color iMacs really transformed the company. Remember, before Steve Jobs showed up, Apple was within months of closing its doors. They were mm-hmm. in very bad shape. That's what Wozniak has told me. that Apple was on death's door, and Jobs comes back and turns the company around, and it comes out first with the color iMacs, the Bondi Blue, and then the color iMacs, and then comes out with the iPod, and it's a very vital company. I think everybody would agree right now.
For me, I would have to say without a doubt, it would have to be the Apple II, because if it wasn't for the Apple II,
well, yeah.
You would not have Apple as a company, because that's
sure.
really how it got its start. And without the Apple II, no Macs, no iPods.
Yes, so I'd agree with you.
So I would say Apple II, bar none.
It's certainly the most important, since it was their first product. Well, actually, it wasn't even their first product. The Apple
I was.
Well,
the Apple
One
was, but that was when it was still a hobbyist
right.
company. It didn't become a real company. Didn't really get incorporated until the Apple II was sold for $666.66.
We did that great podcast with Woz and all of the many of the original Apple employees, Apple employee 5 and 6 and 8, I think, and it was really fun. That was on April 2nd, if you want to go back to our old podcast on This Week in Tech, and it was really a thrill. And certainly, you can say that. What's interesting, though, and you have to say this too, is how many companies can you think of that this question not only would be a tough question to answer, but you could come up with a half dozen good candidates.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not only the Apple II, but the first Mac. The Lisa was a landmark product in many ways. The first PowerBook was remarkable. The very first iPod, the current iPod, the current MacBook Pro. Apple's reinvented itself many times, and I think you could make a case for at least half a dozen different products. And there's not many companies like that where you could really say, boy, look at all of these landmark products that they have released. They've really had quite a good run.
And Microsoft needs to reinvent itself.
They're in the process, and I hope, I pray. I've always, people think, oh, you're an Apple zealot. Not at all. I like diversity. I'm a Linux zealot, and I love Windows. And it's important that we have at least two or three choices in operating systems. So it's important that Microsoft be vital and that Vista be a success. I have some serious concerns about Vista as it gets delayed more and as they strip stuff out. But I agree with you. I think at this point, Microsoft really needs to focus very hard. I would not distract myself with any other concerns. Don't worry. I mean, I think Origami is not worth. Don't worry about other platforms, other hardware. Right now, job 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 for Microsoft is to make Vista the best product it can be and to get it out the door, by January 2007, and make it rock solid. And they need to do that, or they're in deep trouble. Deep trouble.
Absolutely, Leo. Yeah. Leo, I hope you have a very good Easter and a good trip.
Thanks, Mike. I hope the Easter Bunny is kind to you, although I know that you're Jewish, so you probably don't care very much. Have a good Passover, I guess. Mike had two Seders, and I'm jealous now. We were talking in the chat room. One of I would say my favorite feast of the year. I'm not Jewish, but I have many Jewish friends, and I try to go to at least two or three Seders if I can. Greg Lamarada, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hey.
I have a chance to go ahead and buy a good used Gateway. It's not very old, and I want to go ahead and get it for my daughter. She's starting college this year.
Great.
What is the pros and the cons on buying a used Gateway laptop?
It's a laptop? Yeah. Now, desktop, I have fewer problems with a used desktop. Laptops, though, tend to be banged.
It's a laptop, Leo.
Yeah, I know, and they tend to get banged around a lot. Mm-hmm. So you really want to, is it somebody you know who's selling it, or is it a...
Yeah, it comes from an adult. The laptop came from is coming from an adult, so it hasn't been banged around much.
Good. Well, even adults bang them around, believe me. And my laptops last 2 years if I'm lucky. Mm-hmm. Because even if you're careful, I am, it's a portable computer. That means it's going to get, some shaken up. So you're looking for one that, if possible, has been kept mostly on the desk. And there are some things you should be aware of. How old is it?
It's about a year and a half old.
Okay. So one issue is the batteries. Lithium-ion batteries can only be charged a limited number of times, usually 300 to 600 times. So you're going to have probably going to need a new battery in the next 6 months. That's about a $90 purchase.
All right.
Not the end of the world, but just something to be aware of.
What about the hard drive now?
Again, it depends a lot on if it's banged around. A hard drive, right. really, normally, you know, on the average, a hard drive should last 3 to 5 years. But, that's average. Some hard drives last a month. Some hard drives last 10 years. And you don't really know which kind you got in there. But as always, and this would be true of any computer. If it were brand new, you'd want to make sure you backed up regularly. And that you're always facing the potential of that hard drive needing to be replaced. The good news is that's not expensive. Check the hinges on the screen. Another thing that tends to wear out on laptops is these hinges. And, you know, that's more an annoyance than anything else. But what happens is the screen gets floppy and won't stay open. And so make sure that that's good and stiff still, that it hasn't. And, again, that has a lot to do with have they been carrying it around? Have they been opening and closing it all the time? Or has it been sitting on a desk most of the time? If you can get a laptop that's been used basically like a desktop, that, I think, is a perfectly good purchase. Yeah, you're gonna save some good money on this.
The price is right. Oh, yeah, $250 is all it's going to cost me.
Then I'd say go for it.
And
it's running Windows XP?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, now the hard drive, one quick question. I don't mean to interrupt you, but one quick question. You say the battery is $90, right?
Yes.
And what about the hard drive if I have to replace it within the next year or so?
No, it'll be $150.
So that's no big deal.
It's not a huge expense, no. I mean, if you're getting the laptop for $250, I think there's nothing going to... You know, what you're more concerned about is if it's going to die in a year, and it's not. It should be be fine. The other thing to make sure you ask for, and this is true anytime you get a used computer, is get every bit of packaging and disk and documentation you can. You hope that the person has been really careful about preserving that all. What you really care most about is those CDs and any serial numbers that came with it. And then the first thing I would do when you get it, you know, get control of it, is I would take the recovery disk and format that sucker. Bring it. You want to get it back to the day it came from the factory. And there's a disk that comes with most laptops as a recovery disk that will do that. That way, first of all, protects the seller's privacy. It makes sure that you don't have any software that you don't have a license for on there. Make sure that any spyware or viruses that you're inheriting are wiped off. You're starting with a clean slate. And that's going to give you the best performance also from that computer. And then immediately go online and download all the Windows updates to get it up to date.
Okay, so you say go ahead and go with it then. Huh?
I think for $250, how can you go wrong?
All right,
how can you go wrong?
That's what I needed to know.
Yeah, that's about you know, an eighth of the price of it new, I would imagine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, happy Easter, Leo.
Happy Easter. Thanks for the call, Greg. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 12:18.
KFI News, fueled by the worldwide resources of Fox News. KFI AM 640.
12:23 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Can't underscore it enough. If you're getting a used computer, please do yourself a favor and, you know, don't buy it unless you can get all the original discs. I get more questions from people who can't fix the problem because they don't have the original disc. A very important thing not to forget. Randy Victorville, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Randy.
Hi. Yesterday morning, all my USB ports quit.
Oh, dear.
It was working the night before. Then when we turned on the computer in the morning, they wouldn't work then.
And you've tried different devices and a different cable?
Well, yes. I even went into the device manager and uninstalled all the USB controllers and then let it reinstall
them. Okay, you redid those. So your keyboard doesn't work, your mouse doesn't work.
Well, they didn't when they were USB. I've since switched to PS2,
okay.
So I got those back.
Yeah, it sounds like the USB controller died.
In the motherboard?
Yeah.
That's what I was afraid of. I was Googling all day yesterday.
I can't think of anything else. You know, I've been seeing a lot of this lately. In fact, I just was reading a comment from somebody whose USB ports have been dying one by one.
He's
down to his last two. We've got, in the last few weeks on this show, I received a number of calls from people who said their USB ports have stopped working. There's a rash of this going on. And I don't know if it's that there are some USB, not kind of badly designed USB devices out there that are frying them. They are, you know, anytime you have power on a bus, as you do over the USB bus, you always have the risk of short circuits and issues that way. In fact, it's been a big problem with FireWire because it turns out It's possible to jam the FireWire cable in backwards, and by doing so, shorting the whole thing. But I haven't, you know, I don't know of any issues with USB, except that I keep hearing them. So, yeah, it sounds like your motherboard, to be honest with you. One thing you could try,
okay,
not very expensive, is run out to the computer store and get a USB card, a PCI card with a USB on it. They're
okay.
$15, $20. And that would give you all new USB ports. Now, if that didn't work, well, then you might. Then I would say, yeah, there is a software issue or there's something else going on. But it sounds to me like the USB bus is fried. If it is, like I said, all you need to do is get a new card and you'll be all right.
Oh, well, that does sound easy. I didn't even think
of
that.
Yeah, it's just a chipset, you know, on the motherboard. And if that chip fries, and all chips are very, very fragile, you know, to electrical current, If it fails, you're not going to have USB anymore. And that's exactly, you know, it just failed all at once. And it failed in a variety of devices. You know, that sounds to me like a hardware failure. As I said, it could be software. And, you know, if you buy a card, if you don't want to eat the $20, then make sure you can return it. But I think that's at least one way to test it. Rick, Huntington Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI. Hello, Rick.
Leo.
You.
I am so pumped to talk to you. This is awesome.
Oh, thank you, Rick.
Can I throw out something about your cell phone problem first?
Yes.
You know, if you have insurance, it's just like $35 or $50 to replace your phone, no matter what you do to it.
Well, that was the thing. One of the reasons I didn't buy the insurance. First of all, I usually self-insure on those things, and the deductible on the insurance was pretty high. It was like $85 or $100. I can't remember what it was.
Oh, that's out of control.
Yeah, it was too high. It was like, well, all right, I'm going to take the chance that I'm not going to lose the phone. Of course, I came really close. Maybe I will be buying insurance next time. I hate that.
Well, the other thing,
$350 a month, you know, every month, you know, for the insurance.
And the other thing, too, is sometimes they want to insure those high-end phones anyway.
Yeah. Well, exactly, because it's so expensive for them to replace. And this was this is a T-Mobile SDA, which is a, you know, it's a $250 phone.
Oh, yeah, they probably want to insure that anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes those little dots are on the inside. They're not like by the battery where you can see them. Sometimes they're sneaky and they put them inside, like about on the main board of the phone.
You mean the ones that sense water damage?
Yeah, they turn pink from white, or they'll get like little pink lines across it when you get it wet.
That is so sneaky.
They are sneaky.
Well, they have to be because other people are sneaky. Oh, you know what? I have one of those and it's pink.
Yeah.
I just popped the battery and you're right. It's like a little piece of litmus paper.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
That's how they would know that it would got wet, and they would say, yeah, you liar. Leave our store now. Interesting.
But my question is that I'm building a PC for my car, a car PC.
Yeah.
What I want to do is use one of those mini PCs. So I was looking at the A-Open, it looks basically like a Mac Mini, but obviously it runs Windows.
Right.
And now that there's Boot Camp out, I was wondering if I should go with the Mac Mini instead.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, because, I mean, all the front-end software. Because
the Mini is very expensive.
Well, so is the A-Open, though.
Is it $600?
It's $600 to start, and that's with the seller on.
Oh, well, there you go. Forget it, then. Yeah, if it's the same price, I'd get a Mini. You get the remote control, which is really cool. Of course, the remote control doesn't work in Windows. But that doesn't mean it will never work in Windows. They may well make that work. I mean, it's just a device driver, right? And that's what you need for a car computer. You need a remote control. Well, take a break. We'll talk a little bit about the idea of building a computer in your car. In fact, hang on the line because I want to ask you some questions about it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It is news time right now, 1229. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
Rush Limbaugh, tomorrow, 9 to noon.
KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640, most stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. Or you can ask questions online by going to the website, KFIAM640.com, and clicking my name over there on the left, Leo Laporte. That'll take you to my site, leo.am, where the show notes are. This is show, can it be right? 240? Wow. April 16th, 2006. And right on the left there, you can click a button, and then what happens if you've got a microphone and everything hooked up just right? And I get a lot of blank ones, so I have a feeling some people are having trouble getting it working. But you can record a message like this one.
Hi, Leo. This is Kenny. I've been using Outlook Express for some time, and I now want to convert to Outlook. Is there an easy way to transition all my account information, email addresses, and so forth over to Outlook? Thank you very much.
Oh, you bet. I mean, they're both Microsoft products, so don't think there's no way Microsoft wouldn't make it easy for you to go to from the free product that you got with your computer to the expensive product that you have to buy. They make sure that's easy. So there, if I'll put a link in the show notes to a tech note from Microsoft, Kenny, that explains it all. But it's really pretty straightforward. If all you have to do is run some of the wizards and so forth. You can share the Windows address book in Outlook Express can be exported to Outlook, or you can share it. You can use it without exporting it. You can import all the contacts, all the data. All the emails, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, it has to be that, you know, they have to, they want you to buy that product. So, I'll put a link in the show notes. I'm doing it right now. I'm just going to paste that into this Microsoft note that explains, you know, step by step how to do it. It's fairly straightforward, not too complicated. And thank you for the Odeo. We're using, it's an interesting company. Odeo is odeo.com. That's who you use if you leave these messages for me. They're started by Ev Williams, who wrote Blogger, sold it to Google, made a peck of dough, I'm sure. And this is his new venture. Originally, it was to support podcasting. And he's starting to move away from the notion of podcasting now. And one of the features they just recently added was this ability to record messages. And I have a feeling it's that they realize there's no money in podcasting. There's no way to make anything out of that. Ted Camarillo, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte. Oh, wait a minute. Before I get to you, Ted, I'm sorry. We were in the middle of a conversation, and I should have continued that on. I apologize, Rick. I forgot. So we were talking about building a car computer. And the question was whether to do it with a PC or a Mac. But, you know, the problem with boot camp is right now you choose PC or Mac. So in your car particularly, you'd really be buying the Mac Mini as a PC, you know, to run Windows. Unless you want to, I mean, unless you're planning on dual booting.
Are you on with me?
Yeah, I am. I picked you up. Sorry.
Sorry about that. Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to dual boot because all of like the things like the XM integration and backup camera, all that stuff runs through Windows mostly.
Yeah, I think you should just. I don't see any real advantage to getting a Mac machine in that case, unless you think you might down the road want a Mac machine. There's another issue entirely. What happens when you turn the car off? Does the computer shut down?
Yeah, well, what you have to do is there's a company called Opus that makes a particular power supply that inverts the power from your car into 12 volt for your PC, and it has
so
an auto.
It'll stay running off the battery?
No, it has an auto shutdown feature for you. It controls like what you do is it'll put it into hibernate, let's say,
right.
and then it'll turn itself off.
Yeah, because that's a big issue. I mean, in the past when we've talked about car computers, we actually used program things like Linux and DOS that could be just shut off. Because
right.
Windows and Mac both need to be shut down. You can't just turn them off. So that's good. All right. So if that's reliable, that would be a good way to do it. I have to say the Aopen Mini PC is basically a ripoff of the Mac Mini. I mean, it's
exactly
it's the same form factor. I'm surprised it's the same price. I would think that the only real advantage they'd have is by being cheaper.
Well, it's scalable because it starts with Celeron M, and you can get all the way to $1,000 with like a Pentium M, 2. Whatever gigahertz, gigahertz.
You could do the same thing with the Mac. You know, you can slowly upgrade the Mini. I have to say that a dual core Mini at $700 sounds like it's competitively priced. In fact, it sounds like it's a little faster than anything they've put in the Aopen.
So, but how is the Windows on that? I mean, what you do is you run it to a touchscreen LCD, right? And so you run a front-end software over Windows. And, in fact, you don't even boot into the Windows shell. You boot into this other shell called the front-end.
Oh, that's interesting. I've been running Windows using Boot Camp on my iMac, and as far as I can tell, it's identical. It's not some weird version of Windows. It's Windows.
And it's not, like, kind of wacky?
Not wacky in any way. In fact, you've got a PC, basically. The only thing that's wacky is that it has to basically trick it into thinking it's BIOS, but it does that very effectively. Windows doesn't complain in any way. It sees all the hardware. The only hardware it doesn't see currently is the built-in camera on the MacBook Pro and the remote control on the Mini. and the
right, but
iMac.
I don't need that anyways, really.
Yeah. So, you know, if it's cheaper, I'd say, yeah, it's very good hardware. You know, one of the things Apple does do well is they tune their hardware well. They make good equipment. And you're getting, I don't even know if you need a Duo, to be honest with you. You'd probably just get the Solo.
The Core Solo is probably the way I do.
Yeah. But that's the latest chip, you know, that from Intel. It's,
yeah.
They're using Intel chipsets. It's probably very comparable to the A Open, except that, you know, Apple has perhaps a little bit of higher standard in terms of manufacture than A Open.
Well, and that's what I'm thinking is I've never heard, you know, you don't really hear anything about A Open. You don't know anything about
them. They're fine. They're a good company. You know, they're your typical Chinese company. I have nothing against them. I've bought A Open motherboards and they're fine. But I think I think you probably, you know, and if it's not a price advantage, then I would get the Apple.
Okay, well, thanks so much, Leo. I listened to your podcast. You were the man, and I was so pumped to talk to you.
Great, Rick. Sorry I had to put you on hold there, but when news calls, I have to answer. I have no choice. Ted in Camarillo, welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo.
Thanks for...
I experienced your telephone situation twice.
You dropped your phone in the toilet, too?
Well, the first time was a long time ago when Sky pagers were hot and expensive.
Pagers go in the John a lot, don't they?
Yeah, but this is about 20 years ago, and I ended up having to take the toilet off to get it out of the trap.
Oh, no. Oh, that's awful.
And it air-dried for about a week and worked.
It worked.
The telephone, no go.
See, that's what I was wondering. You know, these little portable devices don't have a lot of juice in them. So there's not enough probably to melt anything, to fuse any wires.
I took the battery out immediately. Mm. I took it to my provider. And they said, and I was honest with them.
Yeah.
And of course, the phone wasn't made anymore, and I liked it, so they sold me a rebuilt one. But
and of course, they wouldn't replace it. It's not your,
their
fault.
Oh no, and I was honest with them. I wouldn't tread to rip them off on that.
Well, you know, now I'm glad that my instinct is honesty because I didn't know about that little paper tab they put in there, and it would have been quite humiliating to go in and say, "I don't know what happened." They said, "Well, I know what happened. It was submerged."
Now, Dr. Laporte, the reason for my call is I have a laptop with lockjaw. I sent my Toshiba in for repair, and I dug out of the desk drawer an older IBM and A20M, which had, you know, laid in there for 3 or 4 years.
You like classic hardware, don't you?
Yes.
I
still have my first computer, which was an old trash 80 Model 100 laptop.
Oh, you know, a Model 100 was a great computer.
Yeah, it took a beating and kept on ticking.
It was really the first laptop.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
24K of RAM.
And a little teeny-weeny screen, although considering what it was, it wasn't so bad. What is it? It was like 80 characters by 4 lines, something like that?
Right, right. And 300 baud telephone modem and a tape recorder to save your data.
A little mini cassette recorder. That was used by sports writers. If you go up during ball games, you know, in the late, I guess it would be early 80s, maybe mid 80s, all the sports writers had Model 100s up there.
Yeah, and some police departments even.
Sure, that makes sense,
but on to my problem.
Yes, your A20M. Okay, what happened to it?
I got it out, turned it on, it worked great, and I thought, hey, I'll just pop my wireless card in, which I did, and it still worked.
Wow, that's impressive.
I thought, okay, I'll check my email. So I went to the email server. Now, this is 3 or 4 years since it synced.
That's a lot of email.
It got very, very confused. And after about an hour, I thought, okay, this is enough. I'm going to shut it down.
Yeah.
Well, that was a big mistake because now I can't get the computer to turn on at all.
Really?
It has power. I've gone through everything that IBM says on the website. Took out the RAM, took out the hard drive.
You know, the first thing I do, especially on an older computer, is pop the battery.
I pop the battery.
And leave it out, and then plug the computer in and try to start it.
Yep. Did that.
Didn't help,
take out all the memory and take out the hard drive, so I let everything set for an hour.
But don't put the battery back in.
Did it without the battery.
Okay. Because what happens when batteries are depleted, these lithium-ion batteries are depleted, this might have even been an iCAD, but anyway, when they're depleted, they can actually keep the computer from starting even when it's plugged in. And I would have thought that was what was going on for sure.
Yeah, well...
But so even plugged in without the battery in, it won't start up.
Even plugged in without the battery in, it will not start.
It doesn't do anything?
I have the green light, which says that it's connected to AC.
Right.
But you touch the button, and the little light on the hard drive lights momentarily and then goes out.
This sure
is... I don't have any of the original restoration software.
Yeah, I don't think this is a restoration issue. This is a hardware issue. So,
and I'm not afraid to go into it if I thought I could...
Well, even if the hard drive is dead, you should see BIOS come up. So the fact that you're not even getting to BIOS means that... See, this is really exactly the symptom you'd get with a dead battery. If there's any way to reset...
That's what I was thinking about. If you knew or one of your listeners knew of a way to reset it.
Because that's really what you want to do is, obviously it was working. Now, it's possible that, it just died. I mean, it just coincidentally died, at that point. But it sure sounds like a power issue to me. And it almost sounds like, you put the RAM back in, obviously, you put the hard drive back in.
I put everything back in, and I've got it on the desk now with the battery out.
There's no battery in it. And it's plugged in, and the green light's coming on, so it's seeing power.
And when you push the button, all you get is a little green light that on the hard drive, and it disappears.
You've tried pushing it and holding it, right?
Yeah, like you would with a cell phone.
To turn it off, right?
Yeah.
And make sure it's off. Because sometimes these are on. They're kind of on in a weird on state and hung up. So, the other thing is to, like, really, you've left it unplugged without a battery for a period of time?
Oh, yeah, for
overnight.
Days.
Okay. Yeah, you've done everything I can think of to do. It sounds like it's dead. But
it sounds like an electrical problem.
Well, that's it's exactly what happens when the battery is completely drained and unrechargeable, and you have it in, and then you try to turn it on. That's the kind of symptom you get, and that's why generally the fix is you pop the battery out, but leave it plugged in, and often that'll fix it. But obviously you've done that, so somebody's going to have to call and say what to do because I don't know.
Okay, and I'll keep watching your program notes to see if somebody comes up with something.
We'll put something in there for you.
You are the greatest. You actually help people, and there's a few other people on that don't on the air.
I try.
You are the man.
You know what? I take pride in saying, I don't know. There are a lot of these guys won't say that, and that's, to me, more damaging than anything you could do.
Absolutely.
Make up an answer. I know. What you do, here's the trick, the talk show trick. I put you on hold so that you won't come back with any, discomforting information.
That's happened to me.
In fact, if I'd really wanted to sound good, I would have put you on hold and said, I know what's wrong, pop the battery, and then moved on to the next caller. But I don't like to do that.
Hey, you're the greatest.
Thanks, Ted.
Can't wait to see you back on TV again.
You may be waiting a long time. I don't know.
Uh-oh.
I don't know. Well, we just, if anything, we'll sell the, I do a show in Canada, Call for Help, that I used to do here in the States.
Right.
It was canceled by G4 in the States. G4 is, by the way, a dying channel anyway. So I'm just as happy not being on there. We're having, the problem is they didn't exactly cancel us. They took us off the schedule. So we have some issues.
We're contractually obligated.
I think we don't have any, I don't think we can go to another network.
Oh boy!
So what we're hoping to do is sell it to Google Video and allow people to just. I mean, that's the future. Download this stuff. Who needs
Absolutely.
A network, right?
Absolutely.
So that we're moving pretty quickly along towards that, and I think that's what's going to end up happening.
Hey, have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Ted. You too. Happy Easter, Leo Lapointe, the Tech Guy, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 12:50.
Stimulate yourself all weekend long. KFI AM 640. More stimulating weekends.
Hey, Leo, do you know any good programs to encrypt files using Windows XP than a program to decrypt them?
Yes, I do. There is a call from via ODO off our website. I can highly recommend a program called TrueCrypt. It's absolutely free. It's open source. It is fantastic. It is... for Windows XP, and it's using all the best encryption technologies, and because it's open source, you know there's, you know, there's no magic backdoor or anything to it. TrueCrypt, TrueCrypt.org. Just fantastic. It will allow you to create encrypted volumes, which open automatically when you log in, or not. You can encrypt an entire hard disk or any device. It's really great for a USB flash drive, for instance. Encrypt the whole drive. And then they have something, TrueCrypt has something called plausible deniability. I just love the name. In case an adversary forces you to reveal the password, you can hide the volume so that you can plausibly say to the adversary, there's nothing there. What are you talking about? Because it looks like random data on a drive. There's no identifiable volume. It's really fantastic. Fast, efficient, and absolutely free. TrueCrypt, TrueCrypt, .org. Now, in the show notes, a lot of comments, and maybe I'll take this opportunity to go through them. Arizona Steve had a response for Ted, who called a minute ago with his IBM that just wouldn't start up. Steve says it's a common ThinkPad problem. If the power is turned off while running, I had not heard this, it can corrupt data in the flash memory chip that holds the passwords and configuration data. So, if that flash is damaged, it's a chip. The chip is the Atmel AT24RF08, according to Steve. The only fix IBM says, and I guess you'd have to go to Lenovo these days. Isn't it amazing how Lenovo's just faded out the IBM ThinkPad logo? I mean, it's just gone. It's no more IBM. You'd think they'd want to keep that for a little longer. Anyway, Lenovo or IBM, the techs say that they have to replace the motherboard. But Steve says there is a hack, not easy, to replace the corrupted data in the flash chip. Ooh, okay. And then embarrassed but phone happy. That's a good one. A good story. He says he dropped his Motorola Sliver. That's the brand new one. Really cool iTunes phone in the toilet. The first day he had it, he said, he let it dry out, took out the battery and the SIM card and the flash memory card that holds the iTunes music. That's what I did. You know, I took it all out, let it air dry, and he said it was fine after a couple of days. Woo. And he says now he uses a speakerphone when going to the bathroom. Believe me, I'm keeping the phone out of the bathroom from now on. I wasn't on it. It just fell out of my pocket. And I'm not going to defend myself. There's no excuse. David, Indiana, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, David.
Hello.
How are you today?
What?
Hi, how are you? What can I do for you?
I'm looking for a program to make professional-looking websites.
Are you a webmaster, David?
Yes. I'm actually the one who emailed you from Mississippi.
Oh, I know you, David. How old are you?
12.
Oh, well, at least you're a little older than the first caller in the show. Oh, my gosh. He was only 11 making websites. So, you know, the pros use Dreamweaver, generally. But more and more... And if I were 12, I would be kind of looking at this. More and more people are actually writing code for websites. They might use Dreamweaver for the design part. But really, where the exciting stuff on the web is happening, all the Web 2.0 applications, is something called Ruby on Rails. I'll tell you what. I'll talk a little bit about Ruby, PHP, designing your own website when we come back, because news is next. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. 1259, Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
April 16th, 2006.
Lows 40s and 50s, and tomorrow partly cloudy skies, high 60s and low 70s. It's 62 right now in Irvine, 63 in Newport Beach, 63 in Santa Monica, and 61 in Glendale. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 106, I'm Jessica Rosenthal, KFI News.
Thank you, Jessica. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. We've got 12-year-old David on the line. Wants a job as a web designer. Are you already designing websites for people, or is it something you want to learn so that you can make some money?
Yeah, I want to learn how to do it.
Yeah. Have you got a website yourself yet?
No, I've done some blogs, but no websites yet.
First place to start really is a blog, because then you can kind of get used to the whole idea of putting up a web page and all that stuff. So that's good. You've got that much under your belt. A lot of kids start with MySpace. You're too young for MySpace, but I would say that's very common with teenagers. because MySpace lets you do a little bit of HTML to kind of customize your page. And I noticed my daughter, who's 14, that's her motivation. Actually, it started for her with what is that pets site? She was really into it, and that let you do customized stores and stuff. Have you done any HTML at all, David?
Yeah. I did on Neopets.
Neopets, that's the one. Yep, that's where Abby started. So you know a little HTML, and that's good. You should learn HTML. Although it's becoming, I think, a little less important. The reason you need to know it is so that if something doesn't look quite right, you can look at the underlying HTML and see what's wrong and maybe tweak it.
Okay.
So it's valuable to know it. HTML is really kind of the native language of the net. But, you know, we're now in the, you know, kind of the second or third generation web. I mean, it started in 1989, so it's only a little bit older than you. And really, people really didn't start using websites until 94 when Mosaic came out, 93 or 94. So you're right about the age of the web in many ways. And I can't wait to see what kids your age are going to do, because you've grown up with it, haven't you? I mean, it's been your whole life.
Yeah, it is.
So it makes sense. This is your, in many ways, this is you know, your second language. So a couple of things have changed in Web 2.0. First of all, we've gotten better at separating the content of a page from the layout of a page. And this is very important. You know, in the early days of the web with HTML, the content was weaved in together with the layout, the HTML. All HTML is layout language. It says, you know, bold this, put an image here, this is a clickable link. It shouldn't contain any content, but the way the web was originally designed, it did. It was all weaved together. So we've realized that that's a bad way to do it, mostly because it's different people maintaining the HTML and the content. That's what a blog is really good at. A blog separates the design out from what you're posting, right? You just post something in a kind of plain editor. You might put some links in it, but you don't have to worry about the formatting, the layout, the colors, or anything. That's done by the blog engine, or in the case of Neopets or MySpace, by the software. So that's the first thing to understand. And when you're talking about layout now, you're talking about both CSS, HTML, XHTML, templating. All of that is layout stuff. So you're going to need to learn that for the design part. Websites are really divided into three different camps nowadays. You've got the designers, might be graphic artists, actually really four camps. You've got the designers who are graphic artists who choose colors, create images. You've got the HTML coders who do the layout, the CSS and the HTML. Then you've got the programmers who are doing the engines. Those are the programs that will take data from a database or from files, that's the content, the writing, the pictures, whatever, combine it with the layout from the CSS files, and put it on the screen, do the display. There is actually a fourth group, and those are the people creating the content, you know, writing the stuff, but we'll leave them out. They're really not part of the web design process. So you got three people involved: designers, CSS coders, and programmers. And do you have an interest in all three of those areas, David, or just does one of them particularly interest you?
I definitely want to learn. I have an interest in all of them.
Good. Yeah, I mean, at least initially, you probably should. As you get into the professional world, that distinction will be quickly made. You know, and I think by the time, you know, in 10 years when you really are entering the workforce, this all could be very different. But it's good to know it all, you know, as much as you can of everything. So, you know, I'm not a graphic artist, so I leave the design to other people. But I do like HTML and HTML coding, and I love programming. My real interest is in programming. More and more, we're seeing some really good tools for programming in the background. You've probably heard of PHP. That's one programming language that's commonly used. Perl is another very popular programming language. And the newest, and I think the best yet, is something called Ruby, which is a programming language. It's about 10 years old, came out of Japan. Wasn't adopted very quickly because all the documentation was in Japanese. So here in the States, we haven't really used it much. But it's caught on big time because of a programming framework called Rails. Ruby on Rails is probably the fastest way to design websites these days. Now, it's the programming part. It does some layout, and it's actually written in a way to really support what I just talked about, where you have design, templates, and programming. There's a kind of programming model that uses these kind of notions of dividing this up into three different groups. So the model view controller. So you'll be probably learning a little HTML. You'll be learning a lot more CSS. And then ultimately, you'll probably want to learn a programming language. But I would start simple. Don't overwhelm yourself. It's probably a good idea to just... Do you have a web page or somewhere you can kind of... A playground, a sandbox, you can try this stuff yet?
I'm in the process of buying a web host.
Okay, yeah. You can get one for as little as $5 a month from people like, PowWeb. Get mom or dad to spring for that, because I think it's the best investment they could make in your education. I don't recommend for somebody like you, for old grown-ups like me whose minds are frozen and we really are having a hard time learning something new, then, Dreamweaver, FrontPage, Apple's new iWeb, those are great because they do it all for you. But I think for you, you want to learn how it's done.
Yes.
You should learn how it's done. And you don't need to use these automatic generation tools. And, iWeb's neat because it makes great-looking sites very easily, but it's highly inflexible because you're really stuck in iWeb afterward. You can't ever do it yourself. You can't take that site and now do it yourself. You're stuck in the iWeb mold. FrontPage is somewhat like that, too. Of the three, Dreamweaver is the best. Dreamweaver gives you access to all three levels. And most professional people end up using Dreamweaver to do the CSS and some of the templating. It's just a very handy tool for that. But it's an expensive tool, several hundred dollars. So you don't need it yet. I would say you're going to be doing a lot of typing, a lot of hand coding. But that's okay, because you want to know how it works. So Get a site and then start playing on it. Just start doing stuff. The things you should look at learning are PHP or Ruby on Rails. If I were your age and I were starting out, I'd say I'd learn Ruby right now. I think, I'm learning it myself, but I'm an old guy, so it's going to take me a lot longer than it'll take you. It is very exciting. Most of the new websites that you see, like that Odeo site that I was talking about, that's written in Ruby on Rails. A lot of the new Web 2.0 stuff is done in Ruby on Rails because you can develop quickly, you get something up quickly, it's easy to modify, to switch around, to maintain, and it's very good, pure, object-oriented code that uses this model view controller paradigm that really is, in going forward, the kind of the future of programming. MVC, model view controller. Just keep that in mind. It'll all make sense in a couple of years. David, you're an inspiration. Keep up the good work. And I can't wait to see what you do. It's just amazing what's going on with kids these days. Kathy Redlands, thanks for hanging on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Hey, Kathy.
Hi, Leo. Hey, my problem is I have an older, very older computer. It runs Windows 95.
Oh, my golly.
It's
holy. An Aptiva.
Yes.
The old IBMs. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And anyway, my big problem that I have is I bought a new computer, which will have XP Home on it.
Hallelujah. Okay.
But my A drive isn't working, so I'm...
How do you copy stuff over?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's my big problem.
Yes. Now, that Aptiva, I bet, doesn't even have a USB port on it, does it?
I don't think so.
I bet not.
Because I bought it back in 97 or 98.
Oh, my
something
gosh.
Like that.
Wow. And you've been using it all this time?
Yeah. Well, I don't use it for anything but genealogy.
Oh, it's probably fine.
So I don't do a lot of game playing go into a lot of sites. And,
right.
Unless they're research sites.
Right.
So being an older person, I'm not into all this stuff everybody else.
It doesn't need to move that fast. You got time.
No, it doesn't. All it has to be is accurate.
Yeah. Stand back, though, Kathy, when you boot up this XP machine, because it's going to be so much faster.
I used one someplace else.
Oh, good. All right.
I've been transferring information between the two, and now all of a sudden...
How much data is it? How much data is it? Is it a lot?
No.
You could always email it.
Okay.
If it's not more than a megabyte or two of file sizes, you can just email it to yourself.
Okay.
There's also online services that let you upload data for free and then download it. So do you have high-speed internet or are you dial-up only?
I'm dial-up right now.
So this mailing, it depends again.
Well, with the new computer, my plan is to go with a high-speed.
Right. If the file sizes aren't too big, emailing or uploading, even on dial-up, might not be too painful. There's a great site called box.net, box.net. It's absolutely free. They give you a gigabyte of storage. So you could upload your files to Box.net, and yeah, it might take a little while, but it, you know, you go to bed and upload it, right? It would. Now the advantage of this is it's also now a backup, right?
Yeah.
You've got a copy offline, off-site, which is really what you want, and then you could get online with your XP computer and download it from there. So that's a free way to do it. Box.net. Alternately, you can go out and you can buy software that comes with a cable. And in case your case, you're going to want to get not a USB cable, but a printer cable, a parallel cable. That's what we used to use in those days. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, I've been doing this show so long. I started doing this in 1990, so I was around when that Aptiva came out, and I've had this question many times over the years. So, and they still sell it. You know, Laplink was the program at the time. Aloha Bob is a very good program that does this, but you're going to look for one that comes with a parallel cable in the box, and that will let you directly connect the two computers together and copy the files. In my opinion, that's a little more techy than you need, and it's certainly more expensive than you need. I would just upload this to box.net. You've got a backup there. Yeah, it's going to take time, but it's not. I'm sure you don't have a gigabyte worth of files.
What's interesting is that when I back up and then I turn around and try to restore, it can't read the floppy disk.
Yeah.
However, I have something on a floppy disk, a game on a floppy disk.
Right.
That it runs it fine.
Yeah.
It reads it fine.
There are a couple of problems. One is the head could be out of alignment on the old computer, in which case it could read and write its own disks, but nobody else could read them because they're just out of alignment. Or, you know, the floppy media is not the most reliable media.
Yeah.
And so I have a
flash drive with my new computer.
Yeah. And that's why if you had USB, man, it'd be so easy. You just copy it onto the thumb drive and bring it over, and that'd be a snap, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But that's all right. You know, I think this is an opportunity. Is it all in TOEFL format, or is there different stuff, or is it email? What kind of stuff
is it? Well, it's, like I said, 90% of what I want to move over is my genealogy.
Yeah. So those files are not big.
So, you know, I've got, on the computer itself, I've got a total of almost 3 gigs.
Oh. But a lot of that's programmed. Really? 3 gigs of data?
Yeah, well, but it's different kinds of data.
Okay.
But
what you will want to do in it, most of the genealogical data is stored in a text format. Even if it's stored by the program, it's stored in a text format. So what you will zip it first.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a zip program, download WinZip and install it and zip it, and that will decrease it in size probably by a factor of 10.
Right.
So what looks to be 3 gigs right now is probably only a few hundred megabytes, really.
Okay.
So that's a good idea. You know, don't try to transfer this without compressing it first.
Okay.
That'll save you a lot of time. I'm sure you could go out and spend some money and get some hardware and stuff. I mean, it's a pain and it's confusing and it's difficult. I think you're fine just either emailing it, compress it first and email it, file at a time, or use BoxNet and just upload it.
Well, very good. By the way, you were talking about the Apple IIs a while ago.
Yeah.
I have my first computer that I bought was an Apple II Professional.
Oh,
With two disk drives and everything, and that was back in about 82, 83,
yep.
thereabouts. Yep. And I still have it.
You do?
I shut it all down. I boxed it up, and it's in boxes, but I still have it. And as far as I know, if you'd plug it in, it would still run.
Well, if you ever decide to sell it, let me know. Oh. I'll buy it for
you. Well, good. That's good to know.
I miss Chopper Command. I want my kids to have that experience.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Kat.
Well,
take
thanks
care.
A lot, Leo.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 121.
KFI's big stories. We're on it.
She was walking to a gas station for cigarettes when two pit bulls came after her.
That dog was gonna kill me.
The president believes Secretary Rumsfeld is doing a very fine job during a challenging period in our nation's history.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
You know, Kathy, it's time to get really off that dial-up, and I want to encourage you to call the folks at DSL Extreme, because they can get you a very good deal on high speed. And then something like BoxNet, where you could upload all your files to there, in seconds instead of hours or minutes or days. And it's just $12.95 a month. That's what I love about DSL Extreme. They've got the guaranteed lowest price in the country for high-speed internet. Now, it is not available in all areas. You've got to call and find out if it's available in yours, because some of the phone companies will not make these deals with DSL Extreme. The phone companies are threatened by them, let's face it. But they have made this deal, and almost everybody listening can get this deal. Call 866-2-GET-NET. Or you can see if you qualify online at dslextreme.com. But they've got great prices for everybody. DSL Extreme takes pride in offering great service at the lowest possible price. $12.95 a month. And it's not a teaser rate. I'm not talking 1 month or 3 months. It's for a full year. Guaranteed for a full year. There's no setup fee. The modem is free. Tech support's free. It's just $12.95 a month. Call 866-2-GET-NET. These are the same people I get my internet service from, so I know what I'm talking about. They're really good. 1-866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme.
Traffic presented by Lexus Dealers.
KFI is the talk station with the most frequent traffic reports. At 123, Kirk Lewis is in the KFI Traffic Center.
In West LA, 405 South before Santa Monica Boulevard, a two-car crash is on the shoulder. Traffic a little slow from Sunset Boulevard. Stay slow down to Jefferson near LAX. Checking out the Channel 7 Eyewitness News traffic cams. The 405 North slow from the 105 up to the 10. West Covina 10 West slow from Azusa over to the 605. La Mirada 5 North slow from Artesia Boulevard up to Pioneer. Then again from Atlantic up to the 10. That's traffic on KFI.
John Cobell for Rock Honda. The way to buy your next Honda is online at rockhonda.com. No hassle. You'll save thousands of dollars. Just log on to rockhonda.com, find the Honda that you love, ask for a quick quote, then take it into Rock Honda. You'll get the car for exactly that price, not a penny more. Hassle-free. No negotiating, no car salesman games. Rock Honda in Fontana. You go to rockhonda.com, point, click, and drive.
And hey, the same team now operates Planet Acura. PlanetAcura.com.
The people of Cedars-Sinai.
The healthcare challenges facing our city are enormous. So are some of the steps we're taking to solve them, like opening a new state-of-the-art intensive care facility.
Cedars-Sinai Medical Center is growing to meet the healthcare needs of Los Angeles. In fact, it has just opened the Saperstein Critical Care Tower.
As Vice President of Nursing, I'm thrilled not just because of the new technologies and amenities we can now offer our patients, but how that level of care came about. Our nurses were asked for their opinions before the building was built. When you spend so much time with patients, you know what they want and what's in their best interest. And it's reflected in the new tower. Cedars-Sinai knows how important nurses are to meeting the healthcare challenges in our community.
With the opening of the new tower, there are many opportunities for staff and per diem nurses. For information, call 1-800-CEDARS-1 or visit www.leadingthequest.com. Cedars-Sinai, leading the quest for health.
Excuse me, what are you doing?
Using telepathy to contact my broker, so I'll check out automotive stock.
Why don't you just call him?
Can't, he's too busy. Fast food could be hot.
Stop this madness. Try TD Waterhouse.
You don't get personal attention from a discount broker.
TD Waterhouse has real people who you can talk to about your investment ideas.
No way!
Way!
TD Waterhouse has investment consultants you can talk to in over 140 branches and over the phone. They'll answer questions, review your investment options, and give you the personal attention you deserve, so you can feel confident about managing your own portfolio.
Bring, bring.
Hello there, this is Jim Williams.
Telecommunications?
No, I'm calling TD Waterhouse.
You get a month of free trades. Just call 1-800-TD-WATERHOUSE. That's 1-800-TD-WATERHOUSE or visit tdwaterhouse.com/radio. TD Waterhouse Investor Services, Inc. Member NYSE SIPC. Comparison based on survey of standard equity commissions as of 9-10-04. Services vary by firm. Offer valid for new customers only. Other conditions apply.
Ken Gallagher, this afternoon, 3 to 5 p.m.
KFI, AM 640.
126, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. Show notes are online at KFIAM640.com. You just click my name, Leo Laporte, over there on the left. And that'll take you to leo.am, which is the kind of headquarters for the show notes. You can go to today's show by clicking the link that says Sunday Show. This is show 240. And if you have a comment or a suggestion, you can always go to the bottom of the page, and there's a comment box right there. It's a wiki, and you know, in theory, you could edit it, and I used to do that, but it just got so difficult to maintain the wiki and keep the spam out of it that we'll just use the comments. I think that's easier for everybody all around. You can also click the blue cloud that says send me a voice message and leave a voice message. And if you want to participate in the chat, there are 109 people in there joining Dan and Ash and Carrot and Mike and Oliver and Sweeks, all the chat mods who are so great, working so hard. It really is fun in there. And by the way, we make sure it's kid-friendly because I know we have lots of kids listening. A lot of times chat is not so kid-friendly. So if you're a parent and you're worried about your child visiting our chat room, don't worry. It is safe. I don't do no guarantees during the other hours, off hours, because I think it is open most of the time. But if you go to the KFI chat room, you should be just fine in there. We moderate it so it's kid-friendly and safe for everybody. More links, too, on that webpage to audio archives, past shows, past show notes. Do a search if you're looking for a topic. We got a very good search that'll help you find anything I've talked about in the last 240 shows. And, of course, links to our great sponsors. It's all there at KFIAM640.com. Click my name, Leo Laporte, to go to the KFI show notes. That's a wiki, by the way, which is another kind of web engine that's very popular right now. It's good for collaboration. And it's a very easy website to maintain because you don't have to use HTML. Again, it separates the content from the design. Just some very simple markup to mark up the page. And the rest of it's, you know, all done ahead of time in style sheets. It's a really good way to go, I think. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, we're going to take a break for news, but we'll be back with lots more of your calls. So hang in there, 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 129. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
Rush, he'll set you right. Tomorrow, 9 to noon.
KFI, AM 640.
135, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Here till 2 and the Dr. Dean Adele show coming up. 1-800-520-1KFI. That's the phone number to call. Rob in Tarzana has been hanging on. Thanks for your patience, Rob. Welcome to KFI.
Well, thank you, Leo. I am having a problem with my iOmega backup program. It's called Automatic Backup Pro.
Yeah.
And their technical support people, they've been trying to be helpful, but they just haven't been able to solve it yet. I have a Dell Pentium 4 and 2.66 gigahertz with 512 memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm running Windows XP Service Pack 2.
Okay.
And I'm using Nod 32 antivirus.
Good man.
You.
Good man.
And three anti-spyware programs.
Sounds like you're buttoned down pretty well.
Trying to. Yeah, I'm using Defender.
Good.
Microsoft Defender and AdAware and Spyware Doctor.
Right.
Here's the problem. I can perform a data backup of my files to my external hard drive, but the software won't perform what they call a full system backup.
Hmm.
And when I
what does it do when you try to do that?
Well, I get an error message, and it says there's insufficient resources exist to complete the requested service.
Now, is there enough hard drive space?
Oh gosh, yes, I have plenty of hard drive space. Oh yeah, I've got 160 gigabyte backup, and I've only got 30 or 40 gigabytes on my hard drive that I'm using.
It may be hard drive space on your local hard drive. It may be, I don't know how this program works, but it may have to do stuff locally, like use it in a temp file before it copies it over. Is there? Are you running short of space on your main hard drive?
Oh, no.
Funny there, too.
50% of it left. I got more than 50% of it left.
And how much RAM do you have?
512.
Okay. Well, that should be plenty for any program.
So what's happened? Let me tell you what's happening here. So I tried, I attempted a full system backup in safe mode, and it works.
Ah, there you go.
So then I assumed, well, it must be a piece of software on my computer that's causing the problem. So I excluded key files from the iOmega backup program from being searched in NOD 32.
Okay.
And then I performed a selective system backup so that all the programs in my startup menu wouldn't run.
Right.
Including anti-spyware and antivirus.
Right.
That didn't work. So then the tech support gentleman at iOmega told me that the software is having trouble. They have a lot of problems running with MS Defender, and that I should actually remove Defender from
great.
My system.
Thanks,
not
iOmega.
Just turn it off.
Thank you. Thanks, iOmega.
Yeah, isn't that great? They said they're trying to work it out with Microsoft, but they haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
So I removed Defender from my computer completely. And it still didn't perform the full system backup. And, you know, I could do the same thing with Microsoft, with Spyware Doctor and AdAware. And
it's highly likely that this iOmega backup is a piece of junk. Would be my my strong indication. First of all, iOmega is not the greatest company in the world, and they're certainly not a good software company. They're a hardware company.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, this worked 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's clearly incompatible with something. If it's incompatible with Defender, it's probably incompatible with other things.
Yeah.
It's just not it's not a good piece of software. Now, I generally don't recommend using backup software. Now, here's why. You get a lump on this external drive or wherever you're backing it up to that you can only read if you've got the software installed. It's otherwise useless.
Even if it's a native backup?
So is it backing up the files individually?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. That's okay then. Okay. It's not making a backup file that you then restore.
Well, that's what the full system backup is. The data backup is actually
individual file. Yeah. First of all, you don't need a full system backup because you're backing up tons of stuff you don't need, like Windows, like applications, stuff you've got CDs for. I generally recommend just backing up your data. And stuff that you don't have any other copy of, right? That's what you really need to restore. Here's the deal. I mean, in business, we back up everything. Because in business, restore time has to be minimized.
Well, that's my issue.
You're
too.
In business. Okay, yeah.
I run my business from my home.
All right. So that is reasonable. You know, and home users, you trade off the length of time you may need down the road for restoring by shortening your backup times by not backing up everything. But you'll have to pay for it on the other end if you ever do lose your drive because you'll have to install stuff instead of just restoring it. I would say just get a better backup program if I were you. Why tear your hair out?
Well, that's a good question. I was actually thinking I'd heard on your show, I believe it was last week, somebody had talked about EMC Dan's Retrospect.
Retrospect is, in my opinion, the best, yeah.
Yeah, I may just get that.
I just think it's probably crappy software. I mean, you can continue to spend... Wait, how many hours have you wasted on this?
I'd be embarrassed to tell you.
Spend $50, Rob.
Yeah. Good idea, Leo. You're right.
I mean, it's easy. And I know I do the same thing. You get mad and you say, I'm going to solve this.
Sure, and you get penny wise and pound foolish.
Precisely. You know, I think it's time to cut bait here and say, you know, this isn't getting any better. It sounds like iOmega design kind of junky software. I mean, look at a program that's incompatible with Microsoft Defender. That doesn't bode well. If you don't work with Microsoft's programs, that doesn't bode well for the reliability of it. Just buy a better. And Retrospect, I think you'll find, is very good. You know, if I were in business and it really were important for me to have not only reliable, good backups, but backups I could restore quickly, I'd probably invest in, you know, maybe a DAT or DLT backup, some tape backup, something that was really robust, reliable, and proven in business. On the other hand, the good news is, and you know, this is what he did. He bought an iOmega hard drive that came with his software. You can buy these external hard drives now Western Digital makes one called MyBook. It's 500 gigabytes. And it's under $500. 500 gigabytes. So you can buy these big drives. You can back up, you know, buy two or three of them. Rotate them. You can have a good backup storage. Hard drives are fast. You can back up multiple. If you have 500 gigs, you probably back up your, you know, several machines. And you know, in my opinion, it might be just better to mirror those drives than use backup software. Just, you know, make a copy of the stuff you need. But if you're going to use software, probably Retrospect is the way to go. The EMC bought them. It was Dantz, D-A-N-T-Z, and they just sold the company, and I'm sure that the EMC will do a good job with them. EMCinsignia.com is the name now. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate the call. Hillary, North Hollywood, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Hillary.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great.
My Microsoft Word just simply stopped working. I'm using the Microsoft Office suite of products, the 2003. And I was using it yesterday. I use it for all my invoicing. I was doing invoicing yesterday, and it was working just fine. And I woke up this morning to make a couple more invoices and went to go, you know, when I opened Word, it said document recovered. Well, okay, why is that? I didn't shut down illegally or anything like that. And then I tried to save it and it froze up. It just stopped responding, not responding.
When Word, what happens with Word is if it sees, you know, when you open a file in Word, it creates some temporary files for scratch files for it to work. If it, when it opens, sees scratch files still there, it's supposed to, when you shut down Word normally, it will delete those. If it sees them, it says, uh-oh, you know, something went wrong. It wasn't shut down. You know, when we shut down, we failed. So the fact that it saw those tells me that even though you quit out of Word normally, it was having problems already. So I have a feeling that, it, you know, I mean, really, have you tried uninstalling and reinstalling?
I haven't done that only because I can't find my disks because I was using them on my laptop.
Oh.
I got a new laptop and I was putting all the stuff on the laptop, so I, you know.
It really should be your first resort. If a program stops working, there's not much you can do to fix it except remove and reinstall. I mean, the first resort is just try the repair function. And if you install if you insert the Office disk and run the installer, it'll say, you want me to uninstall it or repair it or upgrade it? Because you already got it. And just say repair. That's probably sufficient. It's probably, you know, programs die. Files get damaged. And it's probably some little file got damaged and Word is not behaving.
So I can just do that.
Yeah, if you can find the disk, yeah.
Right.
Can you think you can find it?
Oh, yeah, I can find it. I've been, you know, between being on hold and trying to work it all out and do the things the computer's telling me to do. You
there's
know?
Not much. I don't think there's much you can do, to be honest with you. I mean, it's not like you can go in there and sew it up, you know, patch it, you know, figure out what's wrong.
Right.
It's such a complex beast. Really, the only thing you can do is just hope that you know, try the repair first. If that doesn't work, then just completely uninstall everything.
Okay. You know, it's doing it in Excel also. So, I mean,
You go. So now you know Office is screwed up.
Yeah. So just reinstall Office and I should be okay.
One hopes. I mean, you know, worst case scenario, that doesn't fix it, then, you know, then maybe Windows is messed up.
Oh, geez.
The thing is, you know, if you could, you know, if you had magic powers and you could see the one file that's damaged, you might be able to fix this. But Office is composed of hundreds of files. It also relies on hundreds of other files that are provided by Windows. Any one of which could be damaged. How do you figure it out? I don't know.
What about disk, like the Office, like the tools, like disk defragmenter and stuff like that?
Yeah, the only tool that might help, and it probably be worth trying this before you tear your apartment up trying to find your Word disk, is the Restore, System Restore. If you've been using that.
I tried that.
You already tried that. Yeah. That's because what that does is it restores, you know, system files that have been moved or damaged, restores them back to a previous date. But if it didn't fix it. Yeah, I think you're facing a reinstall, Hillary.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Well, thank you very much.
But there's no magic bullet. I hope I wish there were. But it's complex. It's a very complex ecosystem. You can't, you know, it's even today with a car, you know, it used to be you could bring a car into a Shade Tree mechanic and he'd listen to it and he'd say, oh, yeah, you need a new Framitzer bolt. And he'd go and he'd replace the Framitzer bolt. Even cars today, you can't do that. You ain't got to plug it into the computer, do the diagnostic. Sometimes have to replace whole subsystems. Stuff has gotten so complex that you just can't replace a bolt. I wish you could. If you knew what bolt was broken, I guess you could. But you'd have to figure it out, and I don't know how you would. 147, 13 away from 2, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Brutally honest, John and Ken. Tomorrow, 3 to 7, KFI, AM 640.
Leo, this is Bradley from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Just wanted to ask you a question about the setup in the Leoville lab. What machines do you have and what do you prefer? I know you've got a Shuttlebox PC in there somewhere. I've heard you mention it before, but what else do you have? Do you have an iMac? Do you have a MacBook Pro?
I'll tell you, Bradley. It's a constantly changing array of computers, but my main system that I use all the time is a Mac. You probably guessed that. It's running dual 2 gigahertz G5s tower, and I'm hoping to upgrade that once the Intel chip towers come out. And a 20-inch cinema display, which I, is it 20, 23? I think it's 23. Really love. Big screens are good. And like Bill Gates, we were talking about him last week, I have two screens in front of me and a KVM switcher. Both screens can run the Mac, or I can have Windows in one and Mac in the other. And that's generally what I do. The Windows machine in right in front of me is a Shuttle PC running an Athlon FX64. I really like that. Fast, powerful chip. I use both at the same time, generally. I also have a HP tablet PC, a 4200, that I will sometimes use for controlling the call screening software. And then I have, a PowerBook laptop and iMac at home and so forth, a variety of Macs at home. But this is a Windows setup and a Mac setup is pretty much it. I have a PC behind me that's running Debian Linux, but I don't generally keep that booted up during the show. It just gets too noisy in here. In fact, it's noisy enough as it is, and that's the problem. In fact, I have another PC that's also not booted up running XP. It's kind of an older machine. I try to keep the Shuttle clear of day-to-day software. It's my editing box, what I do a lot of audio editing on, and I don't want a lot of junk on it. Unfortunately, this is one of the things you kind of often have to do with XP, if you can, is keep one machine clean and isolated and, you know, not online and just the stuff you need, the workhorse. And then, you know, all the other programs and the shareware that I try out, because I try out a lot of programs, I put on the other PC. It's a Pentium 4 2.4 gigahertz, older XP machine. I'm looking to get, maybe a MacBook Pro, one of the new Intel Macs. I think that'd be pretty cool. I've got Windows running on my iMac, the dual, the Core Duo at home, and it runs very nicely. So that might be the solution. I agree with Bill Gates, though. The key is multiple big monitors. He's got three. I'm thinking maybe I need a third. They're so expensive, the big ones. Bob in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI. Hello, Bob. Welcome.
Thank you. A great show as usual.
Thanks.
I've had a Trio now for about 4 months, a 650, mm-hmm. and I wondered what's the option of using it with Microsoft Outlook. What's the pluses or minuses there?
Well, you mean syncing with Outlook or using the Exchange server?
Syncing with Outlook.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's the advantage of it is that you get all your data onto the Trio very easily. So not just your calendar and your address book, you can actually sync Outlook email. I don't do that because I get too much email. It would fill up.
I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I was on the Sprint as the service provider, and they don't. Palm doesn't get involved. They have specials
That's right.
for the Palm device. And one gentleman said, "Sure, yeah, you could do lots of things." And we put the disk in, and we clicked on the Outlook and such, and it transferred. Then I had a tough time hot syncing. It didn't hot sync well, and it was. And then the other Sprint guy said, "Why'd you do that?"
What? He said, don't do that?
Yeah, just go back to your Palm platform. It's a lot easier.
Oh, I see. You're using Pocket Outlook or what? Oh, I see. He says use a Palm desktop on Windows? No, well, it syncs fine with Outlook. I'm not sure what the issues you're having, but it has a Chapura conduit. Whose conduit are you using? Do you know?
No, I don't.
Yeah,
know.
That's what with the way palm syncing works is there's kind of a sync engine, and then different programs have different conduits. So there's the Palm desktop, which has its own conduits written by Palm, but Outlook has conduits. Usually they provide third-party conduits, often by a company called Chapura.
I'm familiar with Chapura. I didn't know. What do they do?
They make conduits. So what they do, they make the translation program that takes your Outlook data and puts it in Palm format so that you can put it on your phone or your PDA. I'm not sure what they ship with the Trio these days. It used to be Chapura. It was Chapura for years. What you might look at, it was Pocket Mirror, but what you might look at is see if they're using Pocket Mirror. What conduits are they using? If you're having trouble with those conduits, you might look at upgrading to a later model. You know, go to Chapura's site, chapura.com, and see if you can get a more recent conduit. You shouldn't be having trouble, but it is normal with syncing to have issues that usually shake themselves out over time. Does it not sync at all, or does it duplicate data?
No, it did sync for about a week, and then all of a sudden there was a problem. They also told me at the time when they first suggested it that you needed to have a newer Office suite, which we had a 97. We upgraded
in
2003.
Well, in fact, your disk usually or often will come with Outlook. Maybe not, but often they give you Outlook.
Well, it gives you when you put the disk in, it gives you an option.
Right.
Do you want to do Palm or do you want to do Outlook?
Right.
Now, I don't know if you had to uninstall, which we didn't do, the Palm and then just reinstall it as Outlook.
No.
So we just the disk in and clicked Outlook, and that should have, he said, that would take care of it.
You know, I understand what the second tech is saying. It can sometimes be finicky, but it works.
Exactly.
And it should work. And it's just a question of playing with it, sometimes uninstalling, reinstalling, sometimes resetting the data. Worst case, you might go to Chapura and get the latest edition, because I'm sure that you don't have the latest edition. They usually have a less powerful edition. But it works, and it works well, and I've had no problems with it. So I think you sometimes syncing is troublesome. There is a free trial on the Chapura site. That might be a way to go. chapura.com. I'm out of time. Dr. Dean's coming up next. I'm glad you spent a little Easter with me. I appreciate it. And I hope you'll be back next Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Make sure you check out the show notes on the website, kfiam640.com, and click my name, Leo Laporte. There'll be lots more about what we talked about today on the website. And, of course, that's a place you can find out more about my podcasts and other ventures, my books and my TV show, too. Thanks for being here. Have a great Easter. Have a great Sunday afternoon. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1:59. Jessica Rosenthal's in the KFI News Center.
April 16th, 2006.
Well, that's it for this edition of The Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at kfiam640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.